Hey, this is Eddie Spaghetti from the greatest rock and roll band in the world, the Supersuckers.
Hey, this is Joe from the Mises.
This is Adam Franklin from Slow Driver.
This is Artie Lang from the Howard Stern Show.
Hey, this is John from the Fed.
Hey, this is Rick Kubik, drummer from Natarose.
This is Josh Hayden from Spain.
Matt Sharp from The Rentals, and you are listening to...
And you're listening to the Dark Stuff Podcast.
And you're listening to the Dark Stuff Podcast.
The Dark Stuff Podcast.
Hello, 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 everyone. It's me, Dave Splash, from thedarkstuff.com and the Dark Stuff Podcast. I'm back with podcast number 112, and in this one, we have my interview with Austin, Texas shoegaze band Ringo Death Star. Ringo Death Star is one of my favorite bands of the last couple of years. They hit almost all of my sonic sweet spots. They're kind of like a cross between maybe Hawkwind, Swerve Driver, and the Jesus and Mary Chain. If you can imagine a meshing of all three of those bands, you get a pretty good idea of what this band is like. They're noisy, they're loud, they're just, wow, very, very powerful. I'd never seen the band live until this particular show. I interviewed them in person before their performance June 21st at the Waiting Room. They were the opening act for Peter Murphy, and in all candor, I was really there to see them. I like Peter Murphy, I respect what he did, but the fact of the matter is, I was there for Ringo Death Star. I was really excited about meeting these guys. I conducted the interview with all three band members, Elliot Frazier, who's a guitar player and singer, Alex Gehring, who's bassist and vocalist, and Daniel Coburn, who plays drums. And during the interview, you'll hear a lot of clicking of sticks, and that's Daniel basically warming up during the interview. He was kind of clicking his sticks the whole time. And Elliot did most of the talking. You hear Alex a little bit. She's a lot quieter, so you kind of have to listen a little bit closely for that one. I was first introduced to Ringo Death Star about 2011 when I got sent a copy of their album Color Trip for my radio show. I loved it. I played the song Do It Every Time for weeks and weeks and weeks on the show. Loved the record and picked up their second album, Mauve. Didn't even realize they had a brand new album until I was talking to them at the show. Their newest album is a record called God's Dream, and if I suggest you buy it, but I also suggest you buy it on vinyl, which apparently you can only get at their shows, so you're going to have to see them live. I mean, get a digital download if you have to, but the vinyl's great. It's on red vinyl. It sounds amazing. It's a really nice piece of product there. Anyways, let's go ahead and get into the interview. We start off just talking about general stuff about the origins of the band, and then they had some pretty great stories about the making of the newest album, God's Dream. So let's go ahead and interview. This is Ringo Death Star on the Dark Stuff Podcast.
Before Alex, I was just kind of trying to get a band together, but you know, I was like playing as Ringo Death Star. But
so it started off as just you by yourself.
Yeah, you know, I was just desperately trying to get a band going, and everyone was a flake, you know. So then,
because I saw pictures of you guys as a four piece. Is it all? How long?
It's been a three piece and a four piece and then a three piece and a four piece, back and forth.
So we're working with the three piece though at this point.
Yeah, it started as a three piece and it's
a three
piece now. Yeah.
Okay, and that works out best for you. You don't feel the need for like a set because there's just so much this wall of guitar.
Well, there's songs that
you can pull it off totally by yourself.
But there's songs that definitely don't sound good with one guitar, and we just try not to play them.
Oh.
Sometimes we'll play them like in Japan where people actually care.
Yeah. Is that a big like base for support for you? I mean, you're popular in Japan.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, the people there, they don't really like. They're so interested in it already that it doesn't like, we're not trying to win them over. Like here it's like a battle every night, you know. So
have you been to Omaha before?
Nope. Not this band. I've been here 12 years ago.
What band were you in?
That was called Very Ultra.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay. Omaha was very different 12 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm certain this place didn't exist.
Well, no, it did.
Well, it was a biker bar before that, and then it was the Lift Ticket Lounge.
Oh, okay.
In the old days.
Yeah.
Like, if you remember how the place is laid out, if you just took the third of the bar, the third of the room facing where the bar is, that used to be this place called the Lift Ticket Lounge, and, like, Nirvana played there when they were in Soundgarden. All that was where the punk shows were in the late 80s or whatever. It was here, but it was only a third of the place because it was, like, a pizza place next to it. Kind of strange. So the new LP is called God's Dream, and I already acknowledged the fact that I haven't heard it, which is, you know, bad form, I suppose. But I didn't know that it was even out until I realized you guys were playing. What can you tell me about the...
Excuse me.
I'll try and edit that out.
Leave it, please. I would prefer if you left it.
What can you tell me about the new record? Where did you make it? And any sort of a story with that?
Many stories.
Yeah?
How much time do you have?
I got all the time you have.
No, we made it in...
Dripping Springs.
Yeah. But it started in September, right? It was like late September of last year.
Okay.
And, yeah, we just kind of... our Japanese label, actually, they were like, you haven't released anything this calendar year. We need to have something out in 2013. So we were like, okay.
So Japanese people still actually buy records?
Yes.
Yeah, that was just the whole reason that we listened to a record label was...
Right.
To just, you know, because we wanted to go to Japan again as soon as possible. So we were like, okay, cool. So, just to be sure we will go to Japan and they won't forget about us, you know.
And then so it was done at the request of the Japanese label, and then you got it released here in the States.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, you know, after our last record, we kind of parted ways with Club AC30 Records and Sonic Onion. And
yeah, I was going to say, because my record didn't see Sonic Onion on them, so you're not working with those guys anymore.
Yeah, they were like just, Club AC30 licensed it to them for North America, so we never like had any direct association
right.
with Sonic Onion.
They weren't like your label specifically,
right,
they just kind of picked up the record.
Yeah, so after the last record, we were just kind of like, what do we do now? You know, we don't want to work with these guys anymore.
Was that Mauv?
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about? Okay.
Yeah, you know, just, no, you know, they're cool guys, but, you know, just the whole British way of doing things didn't fit in with our...
So, Sonic Onion is based in the UK?
No, Club AC.
Oh, Club AC, okay.
Yeah. You know, they probably thought we were nuts or something, I don't know. And we thought they were nuts, so the whole DIY thing didn't really go over well enough over there. So there was like too many like tour managers and things just fucking everything up, you know, on our behalf.
But did you do well in England?
Yeah.
Okay.
But now we're let's do it ourselves, you know, only because it seemed like the easiest thing to do. It was a little harder, but you know.
Yeah. Harder for the easy way, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, you gotta pay for PR and all that, and it's like, what do they really do? Kind of thing. What am I really
kind of depends.
For?
I don't know. I mean, I wanted, maybe the reason that I was not familiar, didn't know that the new record was out, because I didn't, I did the radio, you know, so I get all these records. I've gotten to the point where, like, I forget about just, like, checking on stuff. I'm like, oh no, they don't have a new record out because I didn't get a copy of it. And then it's like, oh yeah, they did. It was like 3-4 months ago. Like, I totally missed it. But,
yeah.
You know, so, but that's, well, that's me being kind of spoiled and getting used to free shit all the time.
Yeah, I mean, we purposefully, like, decided not to do iTunes or any, I don't know, we were trying to just kind of keep this one more direct from us to the fans, you know, cut out all the middleman.
Yeah. And is that working out?
It's worked out pretty well for the vinyl sales. We've sold more vinyls than either one of our last records.
Really?
Any record.
Thank you.
that's because Color Trip was only, they stopped pressing after 1,000, and you know, the price went up to, I mean, people selling it on eBay for $60, and you know, we were just like, that's lame.
Yeah.
But they won't press anymore, and we don't have the right to, legal right to press it, you know, so that's why we decided.
Just keep it under, keep it in house.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I hear a lot of like Creation Records, kind of early mid 90s types of groups, Swerve Driver especially, Jesus and Mary Chain, Sonic Youth. Are there any other groups that you guys are really into or helped, you know, define what you wanted to do that that isn't included in that list that I just gave?
Well, most recently it was probably more of Beach Boys influence.
Really?
Yeah. Taking like mushrooms and listening to Beach Boys.
That's a real experience, not just a...
It sounds cliche, but it's real.
Yeah. I actually, you know, in my mushroom days, I never actually listened to Beach Boys, but I think that would be kind of cool.
Beach Boys' music looks really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the name goes, have you ever gotten any kind of legal thing for, like, trying to use Ringo Starr or the Death Star?
We're not allowed to talk about it.
You're not allowed to talk about it?
Seriously.
Okay, yeah, I believe
that's the case, right? We can talk about it. We just can't. We can't copyright our band name for merchandising.
We can't trademark it,
yeah, or whatever.
Like the Washington.
So what does that mean? That means anybody
we're
could just
like
make
the Washington your... Redskins now.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I guess that means anyone can just sell our T-shirts.
Yeah,
that's a direct result of them sort of not.
Yeah, this guy that's in a rock band from the 60s
might have heard of him.
He's kind
of
mad, supposedly.
Hey, I've got his real signature of Richard Starkey.
I thought he was all peace and love.
He is, but you know, he's got to protect his love interests. You know?
Yeah, I guess so. So who writes what when you guys are playing? Because you have both sing. So should I assume that if like you're singing the song, you wrote that song, or how does the process work? No.
Mm-hmm.
We all write.
Yeah.
We all write parts for each other a lot of times too. It just kind of comes together in weird ways.
Yeah. There's no fixed formula.
Mm-hmm.
No.
No, we've been trying to get out of that, you know.
We all write our own stuff, just like on GarageBand, and then kind of bring it to the band, and then everyone adds their own thing, and then it turns into something else. So
yeah.
It's kind of like always...
Like on God's Dream, like she wrote the guitar part, and I wrote the bass line.
Okay.
And then there's like a song, Bong Load, Daniel wrote the vocal and the guitar, and I wrote the bass and the drums. Yeah, there's other stuff like that.
So is that kind of how you start out, by just one person sort of does something on the demo maybe, and then is that how the recordings come out, or is that separate? Like you kind of work it that way, but then when you go into the studio, it's a totally separate thing, or are those tracks the origins of what you hear on when you listen to the album?
No, the demos are just like GarageBand.
Okay.
I mean, some of them are pretty much done by the time we get there. Some of them are.
Yeah.
Depends.
Well, this is the, you know, we record them.
Yeah, yeah, we don't release the demos.
Right. No, I just was wondering if it's like that's sort of the foundation and you just kind of build on those same demos, but where that's scrapped and it just starts over.
We've been trying to get better at jamming, too, because I was really terrible at jamming.
Yeah.
I started, like, just putting my phone on record and practice and... Actually got a couple cool things last time we practiced.
Yeah.
Like so we'll have more jamming on the next album?
That just means all of us writing something at the same time in the same room rather than someone coming with a demo already recorded. Like,
right.
Here's the song.
Now, how did you land the Peter Murphy tour? Is that something that, did he actually know who you were, or is it just kind of a...
I still don't think he knows
who
you are.
Yeah. I think, you know, we just have the same agency.
Oh, is that right?
You wanted to put together a badass tour.
I'm just glad it's playing because there's an infamous Peter Murphy incident in Omaha like 10, 12 years ago. He showed up and the venue at the time was this place, the Ranch Bowl, which is like a bowling alley and a club in the same building. And I guess the bus pulled around the back and he saw the bowling alley first when he walked out and was like, I'm not playing here. And he got back in the bus and was like, we're not playing. And it's like every band played there. I think the more played, I mean, every group played there. It's not like it was some, like, place that, you know, that wasn't the right spot. I mean, that was the right spot. It was just he got turned off by it, so I just thought it was kind of funny. Now, there's so much great music going on in Texas, especially going back all the way to like 13th Floor Elevators, Butthole Surfer, Scratch Acid. Where do you guys see yourselves in the... I mean, do you think that being from Texas has impacted your sound, and where do you see yourself in that kind of line of all those great bands? I didn't even mention ZZ Top, which I think should be mentioned because they were awesome at one point.
Well, I'm more familiar with ZZ Top than Scratch Acid.
Yeah.
Butthole Surfers, I listened to Hairway to Steven when I was on mushrooms once. That was pretty crazy.
Well, they were on mushrooms when they made it, so, yeah. You know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's Trail of Dead is probably...
Oh, yeah.
I see myself as with those guys or something.
Like, sort of along that same... Because they're very Sonic Youth influenced, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of other information about our album that we didn't.
I would like to hear this other information about the album.
Well, you ever heard of Journey?
I have heard of Journey.
Well, he was that
Filipino guy, the singer.
One of the guys who founded Journey, Greg Raleigh, he was in Santana also.
Yeah. He used to be the keyboardist and the original singer.
Yeah, well his son His name's Sean, and he works at the studio that we've always been recording at now. So, like, he just started working there, like, maybe a year ago or a year, I don't know, lost track of time. But we were working with this one guy on everything before this record, and he doesn't work there anymore. So, Sean works there, and lo and behold, they've got a home studio, right? So, like, we did the drums at the studio, Bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, drums are hard to get at a home studio. So we did the drums at the Bubble with this guy, Frenchie, producing. He did the songs on Sparkler, actually.
Okay.
So we did the rest of the stuff, like guitar, bass, vocals, out at Greg Raleigh's home studio. He has this ranch in Dripping Springs, Texas. So that was cool.
Was he hanging out and stuff?
Hanging out, he's like doing yard work and stuff. You know?
I mean, that's like the guy who, if you look at that old video of Santana doing Black Magic Woman, like that's him singing.
Yeah, he's
the vocal on the track.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's
trying to explain to people that at one point Journey wasn't really that bad, like 77, 78. You know, it's hard because their legacy has been tarnished in my view, but you know, people who like that stuff don't see it that way. But
I played a Neil Sean signature guitar prototype on one song. The strings hadn't been changed probably since the 80s. Like they're like all rusted. Yeah.
So if he didn't get burned like financially by Journey, I mean he's still
he made
a lot of money.
Well, he's actually in Ringo Starr's All Star Band now. So
the irony.
Yeah. I try to tell him like don't mention that we're at your house, you know. But yeah, it was a great environment out there. I basically was living out there for like a week, you know. I didn't go home.
We packed our bags and stayed, and it was, you know, like 45 minutes out of town, so we could go back home if we wanted, but it was nice to be able to like totally separate ourselves.
Well, what's on the agenda for the rest of the year? I mean, how much longer is this tour with Peter Murphy?
This tour, we get home July 12th, and then we go to Europe at the end of August, and then we probably hit the road again in October in the States, and then hopefully go back to Japan, and then release our next record and then do it all over again.
Nice.
If we, you know, as long as we're able to,
yeah,
we'll do it. We played with Swerve Driver, and we played with Adam's other bands too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, is he a fan of yours, or is he?
Yeah,
like,
he actually played some guitar on God's Dream.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of some weird textural stuff. Not what people would expect from Adam Franklin, Swerve Driver, man. But
well, you know, the Swerve Driver reunion tour, the opening night was here for some reason.
Oh, yeah?
In Omaha.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because an obscure British band, you know, having their reunion and they're starting it in Nebraska was kind of, you know, and, like, the show did okay, you know, maybe there's, like, 100 people there or something, but I felt like, wow, you're starting your tour here, like, what the hell was he thinking? I mean, you know, starting New York.
Maybe it's just...
I don't know.
Someone.
I mean, it was awesome, and it was. I never got to see them back in, you know, in their original incarnation. So I was happy to be there, but I was just like, I wonder if this is gonna dampen the mood of the tour with, like, it opens up and it's just kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know how that stuff works. He was a pro though. It sounded great, and it was really awesome. So.
Yeah, he had to use my guitar at one show. It was like a Bolts of Melody or something. And we opened for him then. And he broke his string. And so I had to give him my jazz master to play. So that was when we became friends.
See, I always thought that they were a more popular group in the UK or whatever. And they just were sort of obscure here. But I interviewed him a few years ago, and he said that, yeah, they were kind of obscure even in England. They weren't as well known as, like... bands considered their peers, like Bloody Valentine and Lush and all those.
I thought that they were bigger here, actually, because, like, they were appealing to, like, metal fans, like grunge fans, because they were heavier.
Well, they mixed in that kind of Dinosaur Jr. Crazy Horse kind of element, so it wasn't just the sheen of, like, Bloody Valentine or Lush.
They, like, toured with, like, Soundgarden or something.
I saw, I remember, I didn't see the show because I wasn't there, but they toured with Smashing Pumpkins also in the 90s. So that would have been an interesting though.
Yeah.
I don't know. Not much of a Pumpkins guy, but...
We were just at Billy Corgan's studio the other day.
With Tommy Lee?
Tommy... They did the drums in L.A., but we heard a song. The drums sounded pretty insane.
Yeah?
Never heard, like, a raw Tommy Lee track before.
But it impressed you, though.
I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You could hear the snare drum almost breaking every time. Hit it.
Have any more stories you want to include about the new record? Because I'm glad we got in that Greg Raleigh story, because that was pretty interesting, actually. Because that guy was...
His piano, he didn't play it, but his son played the piano in the breakdown of the song Flower Power. So it's like, you know, because the house is like this huge open living room with a grand piano in the middle of it. And so he, like, recorded it in there on Greg's piano. And,
is the one that he actually used, like, back in his Journey days?
He has the organ, like, the, like, Santana organ.
Yeah.
And, that was just in the studio. But, it was just his personal piano that he practices on and stuff in the main house. And then, like, his wife... Lori, it was like almost, you know, it was like fall, like beginning of October. She was like putting up all these like kind of hay bales and stuff around the property, like making it look really nice. And she's like, she writes children's books or illustrates children's books.
Wow.
So she had like a little studio cottage out there. It was a really nice property. You know, it was really relaxing.
It's gorgeous.
And
I always kind of wonder what happened to him. I mean most people probably look at it as like, man, you fucked up. I mean, you quit right before they went into the stratosphere or whatever, but I bet you he doesn't see it that way.
He's living it, man. He's got like hot rods and shit. Like we showed up there one day and he was sitting out in the driveway in one of his hot rods, like on his phone, like just sitting out there. And like I went in the house and Sean, his son, was like, yeah, he's on the phone with Neil Sean. Like, you know, he just spent like, you know, bought like two Ferraris or something. Like Neil Sean. And Greg was like showing him. He was like, oh yeah, fuck you. Like, look at this. Look at my car. I'm like, yeah.
Do you know who Neil Sean's wife is now?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that chick who was like, they snuck into the White House.
Oh, really?
It was, okay, if you remember right when Obama got elected, he had his first big state dinner. And there were two people that got in that weren't on the guest list, and nobody could figure out how they did it. Like, they bluffed their way in. Okay, this woman and her husband. And they bluffed their way into the White House. They stood there. They got their picture taken with the president and everything. And then everyone was like, these guys weren't actually invited. Like, how did they get past Secret Service? And then that woman, they were on, like, a reality show or whatever. And then she ended up leaving her original husband and going with Neil Sean.
Yeah. Yeah, he sounds pretty insane.
Yeah. Well, he's been a rock star since he was 15. I imagine his whole way of life is just completely warped to the way most people sort of live. I mean, he was at Woodstock at 16 or 15 or 16.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like the same with Billy Corgan, you know, kind of. It's like to the kind of problems that these guys have, to us, they seem like, why is that a problem? Like, why do you even care? But, like, that's like in their world, these little stupid things are problems, and they freak out about shit that we just think is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they must not even know what it's like to be normal. I don't know, it's weird.
I couldn't imagine it. I mean, you play Woodstock at 15 and you think like that's your peak, like right there.
Yeah.
But yet, it wasn't at all for him. I mean, I don't know. The idea that Carlos Santana would be a second guitar player is kind of weird in the first place.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Hendrix never needed a second guitar player. I mean, what's the point?
He had drink tickets.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, they were, I mean, you know, they were like just a big, cool band, I guess.
Yeah. Well, all right. I think I got what I need. If I could...
All right, there you go. The end of the interview with Ringo Deathstar. Hope you enjoyed that. Now your job is to go out and buy their records. If you have a record store in your town still, go there. Otherwise, do it on mail order. The band's website is ringodeathstar.org. There's two R's at the end of Death Star, FYI. Their Twitter handle is @ringodeathstar. Figure out how to purchase their music and do it. That's what should be on your agenda for the next couple of days. On the next podcast, number 113, I'll be interviewing Omaha music legend Derek Higgins. He's been playing in bands in Omaha since the 1970s. We will talk about his entire career on that podcast. So that's in 2 weeks from today. All right, everyone, thanks a lot for listening. This has been the Dark Stuff Podcast.
Transfer of data is complete.